Who's up for talking nonsense?
Who's up for talking nonsense? I'm moving back again, trying not to get super loud. So hopefully I'm not yelling.
You just need to whisper and sit 5 feet back in the microphone.
The house isn't big enough for me to get far enough away from the mic. Hey, this is the Greasy Rapidian.
And I'm the American Jezebel.
We're talking some nonsense. What are we talking about today, American Jezebel?
Today we're talking about the spectacular now.
All right.
But first we'd like to hear from our first official sponsor.
Official sponsor?
Official sponsor, well, of the podcast.
That's not nonsense. That's like serious stuff. That's like no nonsense. Should we call in Dr. No Nonsense?
I don't think we're qualified to deal in no nonsense.
We are far from qualified. Dr. No Nonsense, come on in here.
Hello, this is Dr. No Nonsense, and I am here to talk to you about the podcast sponsor, Sustaina Butter. Sustaina Butter is nutritious nuts without the difficulty of digesting. It's delicious. I can't decide which is my favorite flavor, and you can find it both in the Pearl Street Farmers Market and online. Again, Sustaina Butter. It's delicious.
Thank you, Dr. No Nonsense. We are so excited that we have a first official sponsor.
Super expensive. We're on iTunes.
Yes, we are. It's so exciting. So thank you to all our loyal listeners who are already listening.
Via hey, greasers.
Our... Yes. I was trying to think today about other names of fans and stands, and it's a hard one to come up with a good name for. Yeah.
Debbie did not like being Debbie.
No. If you have ideas of what fans of this podcast should be called.
Yes.
Please write in at American Jezebel. Yes, please start a subgroup about it. But you can also write us at AmericanJezebel.GreasyRapidian@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. You could tweet at us at American Jezebel on Twitter. Or I guess you could comment on an Instagram photo. We're also at American_Jezebel on Instagram.
Yeah.
Expanding our social media.
Yeah, just contact us anyway.
Yes, write in, let us know what you think fans of the show should be called.
All right, so greasers, should we start off with our favorite part? Agree to disagree?
Yes, we should. Because we did have some fan response this last week. There, you know, it's the kissing booth, so there are strong opinions either way.
Strong opinions.
It's a really love-hate relationship with that movie.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so it we is... actually kind of had two ends of that. Two ends of,
it was tribal.
Of an emotion. Yeah.
It was tribal. We had two tribes.
It was.
In.
Yes. Yeah.
Led by Angry Debbie.
Yes.
And
Thoughtful Debbie.
Thoughtful Debbie.
So we want to thank you. Thank you, Thoughtful Debbie and Angry Debbie, both of you, for writing in.
Yeah.
The passion that you brought to the topic of the kissing booth.
Was far exceeding its need for thoughtfulness.
So we appreciate your feedback.
But... we're going to have to agree to disagree.
Agree to disagree. On both counts, with both Thoughtful and Angry Debbies.
Yeah. Angry Debbie was angry because she did not think Lee was the star by far. And
yes.
So we have responded to Angry Debbie's email in depth, and we're just going to have to say for all you listeners out there, if you didn't agree with us either, well, we're going to agree to disagree. Lee was by far the star, and we're still trying to get Joel Courtney on the show. And so we're going to yuck it up with Joel Courtney.
Joel Courtney, we want you to come on.
Come on, Joel.
Tell us about your experience at the Kissing Booth.
Call us.
Some other Netflix originals that you're in that we will do in the future as well. We are big fans, Joel Courtney. We think you brought it in the Kissing Booth.
You did. You delivered as a character and as an actor.
We loved you. Yep. Yes.
Let's yuck it up. Call us. Let's yuck it up.
Give us a call.
Sorry, Angry Debbie. He was the star by far.
Yes, and do you want to go into a little bit of response to Thoughtful Debbie as well?
Well, Thoughtful Debbie, she talked about that maybe we weren't aware that The Kissing Booth was written by a 15-year-old. And we were aware of this, but we wanted to go easy on that 15-year-old because our gripe was not against the 15-year-old that had written this thing and posted it on Wattpad.
Mm-hmm.
That was not our gripe with the movie. 15-year-olds, you just keep on writing and posting it on Wattpad.
I love it. Yeah, keep it up, 15-year-olds.
You just keep on keeping on. All you adult white males that are over the age of 60 that are taking those Wattpad phenoms and then making them into crappy movies, those are the people we had problems with. So Vince Marcello, if you're out there listening, stop it. Stop writing screenplays. You had a good run. Stop. And so Thoughtful Debbie, yes, thank you for pointing out that was a 15-year-old girl, and we were trying to go easy on her. And so we are not going to talk about her, but we are very disappointed at the adult males in the room that had many opportunities to have this movie go a different way other than the way it did. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to even go on anymore because it is emotionally scarring to talk about it. And this is nonsense. So.
And from now on, we only want to talk about The Kissing Booth in the context of the rating system.
Rating systems.
I want to think no more about that movie in any detail.
Yeah, we're thinking of shortening to just KBs or something. We're trying to come up with our own little logo instead of a star. So we're coming up with a logo so we don't even have to say The Kissing Booth any longer.
Yes.
So we might even rate this episode on KBs.
Yeah, I think we should. So Thoughtful Debbie, thank you so much for your thoughtfulness, but we're going to have to agree to disagree.
Agree to disagree.
So let's get into it.
Let's get into
it. Yeah. We have some nonsense here at the top, but let's just jump right in and get into this movie. So The Spectacular Now, a 2013 film.
Yes.
With quite a cast. Like the talent that came into this movie.
Unbelievable.
Yes, this is our first non-Netflix original film. You know, it was a pretty low budget movie made for like $2.5 million and made like $7 million at the box office, something like that. Yeah. So, pretty small potatoes in the scheme of movie making.
Correct.
But, I mean, the people involved in this film and the filmmaking itself.
Yes.
Was very impressive.
Stellar.
Especially compared to the films we have been looking at.
Gigantic leap in acting ability.
Yes, the performances in this.
You need to get on this.
Start making some
start hooking like up with this. These people. Your people need to talk to these people. Forget those other people your people have been talking to.
So instead of diving deep into the intricacies of the plot this time, I'll just give you what Netflix says that this film is about.
Oh, okay.
And then we can jump into some specific scenes that we think are important.
All right.
Some themes.
I'm surfing Netflix looking for a movie. I pull this up, and what do I gather about this movie?
So the Netflix summary for this movie is, a charismatic and hard-partying young man strikes up an unlikely romance with a smart and focused young woman during their last year of high school. Starring Miles Teller.
As the charismatic young man.
Yes, Sutter Keeley is his name. There are some good names in this movie.
Yeah, and
his love interest, the smart and focused young woman, her name in the movie is Amy Finicky. Amy smelled the fancy French way.
Like Amy Mann.
Yes, like Amy Mann.
Yeah, possibly my new future wife. So Amy, if you're out there listening, just know you may be my...
I've heard Amy's a fan, actually.
Yeah, I think Amy is a fan. Let's give a shout out. Hashtag Amy Man. Love the new album. I've been listening to it to death, but I loved you even back in the Till Tuesday days. So Magnolia might even make our list. We might watch Magnolia with an Amy Mann soundtrack.
We might, yeah.
Be Still My Heart.
But Amy Finicky in the film, played by Shailene Woodley. Mm. A bunch of other really impressive people in this movie as well.
Top notch.
Oh, just, I mean, Jennifer Jason Leigh is the mother. Let's talk about his dad later down the line.
Yeah.
Because it's a surprise casting move.
Surprise casting.
His boss at the men's clothing store where he works is Bob Odenkirk, aka Jimmy McGill.
Better Call Saul.
Yeah, Saul Goodman. Love to see him in something.
Great. He's a great actor.
We'll talk about trope watching as well, but the sympathetic teacher character is... played by Andre Royo, famous from The Wire.
Bubs.
Looking much, much more cleaned up in this version. Yes, no one's going to be offering him a bump of anything on the streets of Baltimore when he looks like
he's
that.
He's not putting together a hot shot in this one.
No. Who else shows up in this movie? Oh, Mary Elizabeth Winstead is his older sister.
Brie Larson.
Future Academy Award
Could
winner.
Could have been.
Brie
star
Larson.
By far in this movie.
Yes, is his ex-girlfriend.
Yep, and... Marcus West.
Yes, I apologize. I don't know his name off the top of my head. We can just call him Hunger Games. He's his biggest, I think his, again, I don't want to offend fans of this actor whose name I don't know. But
call
he
us.
Was famous for The Hunger Games.
Call
yeah,
us
call us and
are.
Get mad. I apologize. I don't remember
angry,
your name.
Angry Debbie Marcus West.
Yeah.
Just top notch.
Top notch cast.
Top notch. Even the bit players who are supposed to be high school kids, they seemed like high school kids.
They really did. His best friend.
Yeah.
Yep, seemed like a high schooler.
Yep, her best friend, high school kid, her brother seemed like a younger brother.
Yeah, it really...
Strong work from
which
all.
Which I think also, you know, that isn't... And it also isn't very distracting, even though you go, oh my God, that's Andre Royo as the teacher character. But there's a very strong, naturalistic kind of element to this movie in how they shot it, in the performances, in the settings,
dialogue.
In the costuming, the dialogue... All of it is super naturalistic.
The high school party did not include a house with two pools and an ocean view.
It was people next to a creek.
People next to a creek that people poo in, so don't go in the creek. And here's your red Solo cup and a keg.
Hang out by the dam. Yeah.
Very believable.
The most exciting
high school
thing
party.
In this town is hanging out by the dam.
Correct.
Yes.
Getting beer.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big thing in this town.
Yeah.
Who can get us beer?
There's an adult woman with a paper route.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Very, very well done movie.
Yeah. People don't have super nice cars. They don't live in super nice houses. No. They don't wear super nice clothes.
No.
They really look and behave like real people.
They do.
Yes.
Very nice.
And,
okay.
And the dialogue too and how they interact with each other. She very much seems like a teenage girl.
Super
this
giggly,
is kind of broad and then we'll talk about some
very
scenes.
Off,
yeah. Yeah. Awkward and giggly and
oddly charismatic, not like super slick.
No. He's got charisma, but you can see the effort that it takes and where he falls short in it.
Yes.
And yeah. And they put almost no makeup on her.
Yep.
And even the like pretty ex-girlfriend character, she's wearing like blue eyeshadow at the prom.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of it is
you
not.
You can see her acne.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You can see his face scars.
Yeah.
They really don't cover them up.
Yep.
They really do. There's this very beautiful kind of natural element.
Oh,
to the
I'm
movie.
Just remembering as we're talking, one of the things I wanted to talk about and did not say it to you before we started. We do plan for a whole minute or two before we start these things, just so you know.
Full 60 seconds of planning, yeah.
And so one of the things I forgot in that in-depth planning session, I wanted to talk about the title.
Oh,
just
okay.
Just right from the get-go.
Sure, yeah.
The Spectacular Now.
Yeah.
And so I'm just going to leave it hanging for now because you'll see it throughout our discussion. And then at the end, I'm going to bring it back again.
Okay.
But so... Right, that's how good this movie is, that even the title, you should be wondering about. You should go, wow, The Spectacular Now? Why is this movie named that?
Mm-hmm.
That's how good this movie is.
Yeah, and this movie is also based on a book. Neither of us have read the book.
No.
A lot of these like young adult coming of age stories seem to be based on originally on books.
Yeah.
So we don't know what that looks like. But I was going to ask, kind of based on that, if you were to read that Netflix description of this movie, is this movie at all what you would anticipate what the reality of this movie is? Is it at all what you would have anticipated based on the photos and the Netflix summary and the trailer, anything like that?
You're asking me the greasy rapidian?
Yes, I'm asking you.
Well, so of course, as you know from our Set It Up issue, that I like to look at the little album cover thumbnails that they give us.
Mm-hmm.
So the album cover thumbnail for this one was Amy Free, what's her last name?
Finicky.
Yeah. So Shailene Woodley,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so she's the cover of this thing. And the movie's really about him.
Yes. This is our first movie where the main character is a boy.
That's correct.
This is our first boy movie.
The liminal
space
is him.
Yes.
And somewhat her.
A little bit.
But more about him because he actively addresses it and we'll come to that
later.
Yeah,
and we know a lot more about his inner life than we do hers. We hear stuff from her.
Yes.
And like we hear her mom's voice, but we never meet her mom.
This is another interesting thing because there are a lot of people that are invisible,
mm-hmm.
which is very curious because her sister is invisible too. We hear a lot about her sister, but we never see her sister.
Yeah.
So a lot of her life is invisible,
mm-hmm.
including her inner life, which goes to your point that this isn't about her
because
so much of her life is actually invisible, literally. Invisible. Her mother is invisible. Her sister is invisible.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad is not there.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that later.
The stepdad that goes to the casino with the mom, also invisible.
Invisible, yeah.
Yes.
And we briefly see the brother. So most of her life is invisible.
Mm-hmm.
It's him. And so she shows up on my thumbnail. So, wow, there she is. This must be another coming of age girl drama. Mm-hmm. It is not.
It is not. It's...
And I don't think the description portrays the darkness of this movie. This is a
sad movie.
Dark movie. And so we're not here just to review light, fluffy, happy.
No.
You know, I'm looking forward to For All the Boys I Loved Before because...
After this one in particular.
Super lovely movie.
I have to say, it was harder the second time too because especially if you read this description and you saw the thumbnail picture and you maybe even saw the trailer.
Yeah.
You go in not knowing what's going to happen. And we both watched this for the second time in preparation for this episode. Yeah. And knowing every beat that was going to happen.
Yes.
Just, it was kind of hard to get through the second time.
If we had live streamed this viewing, you would have heard as a new scene opened up, you would have heard us go, oh, as we remembered how that scene was going to unfold.
Yeah.
And this was about probably 98% of the scenes was us moaning because we knew how they were going to unfold. The spectacular now is to be remembered.
It is.
We're not going to go through it scene by scene like we have other ones, but we're going to talk about some of the key scenes.
Yes. Would you like to start us off with a key scene?
Okay. So I think I'm going to start. My key scene is going to be the dinner party.
Okay.
So I'm just going to be briefly going to set it up, but, you know, he's broke up with his girlfriend. He's gone on a drunken bender. He winds up in a yard in the middle of the morning, and the heroine... the protagonist, the female protagonist, she finds him and takes him on her paper route, and he goes with her to deliver the paper route. And then they start studying together, much to the dismay of her friend Crystal, and much to the dismay of his friend, Ricky. And so then he starts to ghost her, and he's driving to his sister's house for dinner, and he thinks about some things, and he turns around and he goes back, shows up on her door and says, hey, I was thinking you should go to my sister's house for dinner.
And the sister is married to this very fancy lawyer, apparently.
Yeah. And we forgot to mention her. She was the villain in Sky High.
Yes, I mentioned her name. Oh. Yes, and she's now famously in the recent seasons of Fargo.
Oh.
Yeah.
So they go to her house. She's married to this lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another couple there, a third couple, which is one of my big questions about this scene.
Who are those people?
Because, again, it's this curious thing about the movie. There's these invisible people. These people are there at the dinner party. They don't say a word. They're never introduced. They only have reaction shots.
It's just reaction shots. Yes. Yeah.
Of the other two couples interacting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in this scene... Sutter's sister,
Holly. Yes.
Holly and Sutter's sister, Holly, who's married to the lawyer, is describing how she and the lawyer met. And then Sutter says, oh, it's so great that you found each other and you have love because, you know, so many things break up. Like, we're divorced, you know, and Amy's parents are divorced. And she says, oh, no, my father died. And then she tells this tragic story of her father's opioid overdose.
And how her sister found him in the kitchen.
Opened up his eyes and he was dead. And then... we see a reaction shot of the other couple.
You know, thought they were going to this nice lawyery dinner.
You know, and then there's some pleasantries exchanged as they try to soothe it over. And then Amy, in the way which is her character, super acquiescent to everyone else's feelings, says, oh, I'm so sorry. But when I get married, I'm going to live on a farm and both my husband and I are going to have horses, but I'm going to work for NASA and he's going to work for somebody else. And the lawyer gets this smirky thing on his face and says, sounds like a big dream. And she says, it's important to have dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just kind of smirks. And we see the reaction from the couple. And they said, yes, it is. And that's kind of the end of the dinner.
Mm-hmm.
She's laying out her whole future, which is like the only time we really hear a lot from her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she talks later about going to college. And luckily, trope watch alert... she is not going to an Ivy.
They don't even mention the name.
They do not.
No.
She's going to a school in Philadelphia. You know, we're thinking they're in Georgia. We don't know where they're even at. We're thinking they're in Upper Georgia.
Yeah.
Northern Georgia.
The filmmaker is from Georgia. It seems to be kind of in the South.
He stops in the Georgia bar later.
Yeah. Nobody has an accent, which is the thing that kind of throws it, especially if they're in small town Georgia.
There they are at this dinner party, and she's laying out her dreams, you know, and it's the only time we hear from her.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole thing about this scene is the odd awkwardness of it. there's the couple that's hosting it, his mm-hmm. sister and her lawyer boyfriend, husband who's very wealthy. She doesn't have to work a day again in her life. And clearly she met him working at some hoochie hamburger joint. Mm-hmm. And so then he fell for that. And so you go, okay, there's that. And then there's the other couple that just sits there. Mm-hmm. And then it's these two that he is kind of, everybody says you're slumming to be with Amy. And Amy's just so thrilled to be with him mm-hmm. because she's never had a boyfriend. And we're going to come back to that. but she's just thrilled to have anybody be interested in her. And so then she lays out her dreams. And there's like no response to it. Mm-hmm. You know, including the awkward couple. And so, you know, as I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about his character struggles with not having any dreams. Mm-hmm. And even at the party, to hear somebody dream is really awkward for everyone. You know, there's a very awkward interaction. Mm-hmm. And so there's the message, the whole message of the dinner party, to dream about the future is just nonsense, and it's awkward for those of us around. You should be living in the now.
Oh, that's, yes, I hadn't thought about it that way. Because I think that there's also, do you think that there's a level too of, she's clearly also like this fish out of water at the dinner party.
Yes.
Even the way that she's dressed, yes. the way that these lawyers and the lawyer other, I assume, wealthy couple,
yes.
Are very dressed up and dolled up. They're wearing the most makeup and are the most, yeah. you know,
pearls.
Fancy people.
Pearls.
Yeah, she is wearing pearls in the movie. And clearly there's a huge class difference between her and the people at the dinner party. And she's
but
wearing
not
like
between
a
her
t-shirt.
And him.
No, not between her and him.
Correct.
But between, she is, yeah, she's clearly doesn't belong at this dinner party though.
No, and I like that you brought that up because there's almost like, you know, three tiers of society.
Mm-hmm.
It's them, then the couple that doesn't talk, and then the couple that's hosting it. And you mm-hmm. can kind of see there's mm-hmm. the lower class, the middle class, and the upper class.
Mm-hmm. And he very much, you know, is kind of in a Sutter. I was just saying he. Sutter is clearly kind of in her realm as well.
Lower
of
class.
That lower class. He
yes.
is a single mom who's a nurse.
Yes.
Lives in kind of this small, modest
yes.
house. Yes. Anyway, so she's there's a
and
clear class difference
is
there.
The Horatio Alger pulled
yes.
herself up by bootstraps.
Mm-hmm.
Married well.
Yeah. yeah.
And is now living into that dream.
Mm-hmm. Yes, clearly. Like, very clearly living into that.
Yes.
Like, literally wearing pearls and
correct.
Sitting on the porch drinking lemonade.
Talking about the landscaping.
Yes, yeah. That they clearly didn't do themselves.
Correct.
Yeah. So there's a class difference element to it. And then there's also, it's so funny, too, like, the two stories that she kind of, or the two ways that she interjects into the conversation. Because there's her talking about her father dying from an opioid overdose.
Correct.
Which is this very serious and dark thing that she's experienced.
Yes.
And then the other thing is her talking about this dream. And I
yes.
think an element of the awkwardness of that dream is not just that it's a dream, but what kind of dream it is.
Uh-huh.
Because I think to them, it would sound like this incredibly naive thing to dream. Oh, I know that my marriage will work because we're going to live on a horse farm and I'm going to work at NASA.
Yes.
It's like, how many people who work at NASA live on horse farms? I don't
write
know.
Us, Debbie.
Like, tell us if there are people that do work on horse farms who also work at NASA. But there's a naive, almost childlike element to her dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something that we see about her as well a little bit throughout the movie.
Okay.
That she kind of lives in a little bit into these fantasies that she has. You know, the one real thing that we know about her, too, is that she likes this book about this girl, this anime book, this manga, excuse me, manga about this girl who has to save the planet. So she clearly has this fascination with space and
powerful women.
And powerful women
mm-hmm.
and kind of fantasy as well.
Correct.
And that dream that she has, to me, and I think to the people at the dinner party, it's a fantasy.
Yeah.
So I think there's an element of that awkwardness
right.
as well.
But I'm sticking with my
dreaming.
You shouldn't dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that you brought in the classes because you are lower class,
mm-hmm.
which is going to come back later in the
yeah,
podcast.
Yeah, how are you going to achieve those dreams?
And also recognize your station.
Mm-hmm.
There's a piece of that.
Mm-hmm.
You should recognize your station.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we're straying a little bit here, but we're going to come back to the theme of our show, which is coming of age and liminal spaces.
Uh-huh.
So what scene would you like to talk about, American Jezebel? You could do the booty call with Marcus's visit to the tie shop, the menswear.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So let's talk about that, because he's kind of hung up. Sutter is kind of hung up on his old girlfriend throughout the movie.
Trope watch. He's filling out his...
he's talking about his ex-girlfriend and his college applications.
Yeah.
Which we know that gets you... College deans love to read about your ex-girlfriend and how much you two love to party in high school. So he's kind of hung up on her a little bit throughout the rest of the film.
Yes.
So even though he's developing this romance with Amy, he's still messaging her. And so he messages his ex-girlfriend and he goes over and he's sitting on her bed with her and they're kind of reminiscing about how great their relationship had been and all these kind of great times they had together. And she's saying, you know, I've never felt with anybody else the way that I feel with you. And they're drinking out of his omnipresent... Master thirst, kind of 7-Eleven soda that he's always...
32 or 64 ounce.
Yeah, that he's just always pouring stuff from his flask into. Correct. I was keeping track as we watched how many times we saw it, because it's, you know, representative of one of the things that he struggles with throughout the movie.
Right.
And it comes up even in the description, a hard-partying young man.
Yes.
He is a hard partier.
He's a drinker.
He is a drinker. Yes. It's not even a partier.
No.
It's just when he's at work, when he's driving his friends. Yeah. So he's over there and they're drinking and they're and reminiscing about these things. And he says, you know, I feel one of those moments coming right now.
Yeah.
And then she doesn't give in to that moment and says, but you can't. But I want more than that.
Yeah.
You can't give that to me, can you?
I want a future.
Yes. It's this really key moment where she is one of my favorite characters in the movie too, because she has this very compelling journey of, she loves him. You know, it's also a very human thing about the movie. She loves him, but he is all about living in the moment. He's all about just not thinking beyond the next 15 minutes, the next night. He wakes up the next day and is like, oh God, what did I promise people yesterday?
Yes.
He's never looking ahead to the future. He's applying to college in June. And she realizes that even though she loves him and he has all of these good qualities to him, he is not what she wants. He can never build a future with her.
Yeah.
And so she just starts to cry and asks him to leave.
Yeah, she literally asks him, can you see a future? And he said, no, the important thing is right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is the important thing. What's happening right now?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when she starts crying.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause she realizes he can't provide what she wants.
As much as she loves him. Yeah. Yeah.
So she kicks him out. Get out of here.
And then he goes to work at the men's clothing store.
Yep.
And her new boyfriend comes in, and he's like, I feel like in another movie, but there could also be a movie about him. He's the, you know, star athlete. He's started a charity.
Class
president. He started a charity called the Hope Squadron. Which is like a great band name. The Hope Squadron. And he's done all these amazing things. He's always wearing like polos and button downs. He's a serious young man. And he comes in and he confronts him and almost like physically, you know, kind of intimidates him.
Yep.
And starts to go, whoa, 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 hold on. You know, nothing's going on with me and Cassidy, the ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
She loves you. You know, you're the one that she can build something with.
Yeah. You do things in the world.
Yes.
Everybody likes me because I'm a good time, but you actually do things in the world.
So he's really self-aware about who he is and unwilling to change those things, really, for most of the movie.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't think anything's wrong with the way he lives, of living in the moment.
That's right. When she says, I want a future, he could have said, okay, I'll give you a future, and then he got her back.
No, he is also honest about those things.
That's right.
That's one of his good qualities as well.
Yeah.
And then the Marcus West... founder of the Hope Squadron, he says, why can't I be the one that she has fun with?
Yeah.
And so he feels this gaping kind of, or this place where he is falling short for her, that he feels insecure that Sutter can be the one that she has so much fun with.
Right.
And Sutter gives him, you know, his kind of life advice, live in the moment, you need to relax, have fun, let loose. Everything doesn't have to be serious all the time.
Yeah, just enjoy the now.
Mm-hmm.
You got to live in the moment, man. Mm-hmm. This is it. This is when this is the best I think at one point he says, we'll never be younger than we are right now.
Oh, that was a prom. Yeah, when he just loves everybody and he's like, wow, like, look at all these people. I love these people. We'll never be younger than we are right now.
So he's deep. He's a deep well.
He is. And then Marcus is leaving. The last kind of important thing is that as Marcus is leaving.
The American Vandal moment.
Yes. Yeah, yes. And so as Marcus is leaving, he turns around and he goes, hey, Sutter. And I think he is trying to be nice in saying this.
Yes.
He's not insulting him.
No.
But he says, you know, they're wrong about you. You're not the joke everybody thinks you are.
Yes.
And then he leaves. And so I think he is trying to say something
really
kind.
And Sutter takes a tug on his jug.
Takes a tug out of the master thirst. Mm-hmm. Because like Dylan Maxwell in American Vandal, which is another one of my plugs, everyone go watch American Vandal. Season 2 is also very good.
Okay.
He realizes how other people see him.
Yes.
Not as just the fun party guy. Yeah. Not as the, oh, everyone loves him. He can get us beer. Easy, charming guy. They think that he's a joke.
They think he's a joke.
That living in the moment makes him a joke.
In those two scenes that happen very closely together, he strongly stresses his commitment to the now.
Mm-hmm. Which then also costs him graduating from high school. He gets an empty diploma.
And so in the liminal space, he's not in the was, although he's going to visit the was here in a second.
Mm-hmm.
He's living in the is.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the becoming. And everybody around him is the becoming.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus is the becoming. Cassidy, his ex-girlfriend, is the becoming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even when she parts with him, she says, you will always be my favorite ex-boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to be coming with her.
No, she clearly tells him that,
too. She clearly
says, you cannot come and see me.
This is over, and I'm moving forward, and
you are
not
in the was now.
You're in the was.
In a kind way, you are the was.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You're a great part of my was.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else.
He is in the is.
He's not in the becoming. So he's
moving.
He's not in the becoming.
He won't move into the liminal space.
He will not. He's refusing to go. The liminal space is calling. It's beckoning all of those people.
So should we talk?
And he can see the liminal space.
Yes.
He can see everybody around him moving into it, and he is steadfastly refusing to move into it.
Yeah.
And I think it's important because when we have these, you know, the liminal space can be painful.
Mm-hmm.
Can be very painful.
Mm-hmm.
And so he does not want to face the pain, and we'll find out later why, right?
Mm-hmm.
When he writes
the fact that he drinks in almost every single scene of the movie is a way to deal with not confronting that pain. So should we talk about his trip to visit his dad?
Yeah, so the part of the was that he does not acknowledge is his father. And he actually lies to Emily when he meets him. My father's not around because he's an airline pilot. He flies all over,
mm-hmm.
which is a lie.
And then lies, my mom kicked him out.
Kicked him out, yeah.
Although that might be something that he actually believes. He has this very strong vision of his dad and idolizes his absent father.
Correct.
And is mad at his mother, the parent who's there.
Yes.
And actually makes demands of him and takes care of him and harangues him for not hanging up her nurse uniform.
Yep.
Scrubs, excuse me, her nurse uniform. So he's...
Trump alert.
Yes.
Single hardworking nurse mother.
They're always nurses. I don't know. Does it save the costume department money if they just have old scrubs they can put the mom characters in?
I don't know. It may be that we're stuck in, you know, what jobs could a woman have?
Yeah, that's true.
She could be a teacher or a nurse, I guess.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, a kindergarten teacher or a nurse.
That's pretty much it. So let's make her a nurse.
Yeah. Oh, that'll save us, you know. Then we don't have to worry,
way
like,
more
what grade does she... Yeah, what grade does she teach? Who cares? She's just a nurse.
And we could just costume her.
We can set
her,
a scene
like,
in a hospital. Yeah.
Anyway. No more single nurse mothers.
So he has this vision of his dad, and he thinks his mom is keeping him from his dad, but he gets the phone number for his dad. He calls him and says, hey, can I come see you? And his dad says, oh, yeah, if you come down at Friday at 3 o'clock, we can go see a game. So he and Amy, I assume leave early because they drive 3 hours on that Friday to go and see his dad at 3 o'clock.
Correct.
They show up, and who opens the door?
Clear eyes, full heart, can't lose.
His dad is played by the one and only Kyle Chandler, a.k.a. Coach Taylor.
Coach Taylor.
This is not the Coach Taylor we know and love, for those of you that are fans of Friday Night Lights.
When Tammy left him, things went downhill.
Things went super downhill for Coach Taylor. Oh, man. So breaks all the parts that they cast are really great because a lot of them are kind of playing against type in all of these. Yeah. Andre Royo's playing against type.
Yeah.
Bob Odenkirk playing against type.
Yeah. Holly.
Holly playing against type. Yeah. Yes. Everybody in this movie, aside from the teens, are really playing against type.
Yeah.
And here we have this vision of Coach Taylor, of Kyle Chandler. We see him and we think of Coach Taylor. And here he's really playing against type.
Yeah. And so we're going to cut this scene a little bit short because it's painful, but he takes him to, he forgets about the game.
It's so hard to watch.
And then he takes him to a bar so that they can drink together. And so he buys a bunch of beer,
He orders a bunch of beers.
And then they drink beers and he gets progressively more and more intoxicated. And then he starts to get combative with his son, you know, and then he says, I'm just here. I'm living in the moment. This is what's important.
They really drive it home in this scene. Yeah. Yes.
I'm not worried about the past. I'm not worried about the future. I'm living in the moment. And I got to go because I got to take Rhonda home, who's had too much to drink. I'll meet you later.
Can you pick up the tab?
And so then he leaves them in the bar. And they wait outside of his house for hours for him to come home, and he does not. So they go back to the bar, and there he is in the bar drinking with his buddies. They can see him through the window.
I mean, it's a pretty in-your-face representation of the was, the way that he has passed him, the way that he is like his father.
And what his becoming is going to be if he doesn't step into his liminal space.
Yes.
If he doesn't say, if I keep drinking, I'm going to lose the woman I love, just like my dad did, and I'm going to be in the bar drinking by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so what does he do?
His dad
Spoiler alert.
Well, his dad is still also, like, you know, has the same charm that he does.
Oh, and, absolutely.
You know, he's best buddies with everybody in the bar.
Oh, they love him.
Yeah, but, I mean, that just does, where does that actually get you?
It gets you a plastic cup full of beer
at
the local bar.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a rough bar.
It was.
It was barflies. It was, you know.
I mean, it was the middle of the afternoon that they were going in.
It was Bukowski drinking.
Yeah. 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 And they even play the song on the jukebox that's Live Fast, Die Young, Leave a Beautiful Memory.
Yeah.
You know, they really drive home in that scene.
Yeah.
Those things. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he sees.
Yeah. Sits out in front of his dad's house drinking, gets really drunk, and then decides to drive 3 hours home.
Mm-hmm.
Gets in a fight with Amy because she says that she loves him, and he's like, you don't love me. Get out of the car. So she gets out of the car, and bad things happen.
It's a really painful scene to watch.
And I think that if we say Amy can see it, she's sitting across the table, and you can see it in her eyes. She's a great actress.
She really is.
Fantastic.
So good in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can see it in her eyes that she can see that's who he's going to become.
Yeah.
And he can't see it because he's still idolizing his dad.
Yeah.
You know, when he's with his dad. And then driving home, he's trying to make sense of what happened with him and his dad.
As he's drinking more to kind of numb that.
And then he takes it out on her that he can't figure out what's going on with his dad. And then things go really badly.
Yes.
You know. So now it's been really laid out clear to the two characters, Sutter and Amy, here it is, right?
This is what it looks like if I continue to be the person that I'm being right now. Correct. And behave the ways that I'm behaving.
Yep.
Oh.
But she still says, take me to prom.
Yep.
Yep.
And then when they meet up again, she says, can we just pretend that it never happened?
Let's pretend it never happened.
You're all that matters to me.
Yep. Come to Philadelphia with me. We can get jobs in the bookstore. Oh. And there's lots of available places to rent. And she said, this is when I'm leaving. I need you to get on the bus with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't come to the bus, right? And his phone rings, and there's her name on the phone, and it's Amy, like Amy Mann, right? Which made me think, because the soundtrack was incredible.
The
people behind this were great.
I mean, it's a really, really good movie. It's
very, very well done. Like, meticulous.
Yeah.
Meticulously done. Maybe we're just coming off the kissing booth, but I still think it would stand on its own merits of the quality of talent
absolutely.
Behind this.
Yeah.
You know, in front of the cameras, behind the cameras, in post-production.
I mean, we're not going to, we're not going to choose a star by far based on performances because there's a lot of really good performance. I mean, Coach Taylor is really good. I mean,
really good.
Oh.
Yep.
At playing that character, that dad.
Yep. He's not our star by far, though.
No. Oh, no. I don't think Matt's never the star.
Amy, and so this is a little shout out, because then I was like, oh, I think they spell their name like Amy from the Pure Prairie League song. And she doesn't. She spells her name like Amy Mann. Mm-hmm. She stole my heart.
A-I-M-E-E.
Yep, and mm-hmm. Amy from Pure Prairie League is A-M-I-E. Mm-hmm. But so we're giving a shout out to Punch Up the Jam.
Every podcast episode, we're shouting out another podcast episode. Punch episodes. Up the Jam.
You're out there listening. You're following us.
Yes, our loyal listeners out in L.A., Punch Up the Jam.
You should do an episode on Amy by Pure Prairie League. Because the lyrics... Man, this is this movie. I think that's why they named her character Amy.
Hmm.
I can see why you think you belong to me. I never let you think or let you see one thing for yourself. But now you're off with someone else and I'm alone. See, I thought that I might keep you for my own. Amy, what you gonna do? I think I could stay with you for a while. Maybe longer if I do.
Not making big promises beyond the moment.
Oh, my God. I never let you think or let you see one thing for yourself. That's him and her.
Mm-hmm.
That's their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so then she gets on the bus, right? And he's left at home, which brings us to the ending of the movie.
Yes. So there's kind of a run of critical scenes at the end of the movie where everything basically just falls apart.
Yes.
So he disappoints his teacher. Fails geometry and therefore does not graduate from high school. Yes. We don't know if eventually he actually goes back and finishes.
No.
Ree
says, you're my favorite ex-boyfriend.
Cuts off contact with him. He goes into his job and his boss tells him that he has to let one of the salespeople go. And he said he wants to keep him, but that he has to promise that he will not come to work drunk ever again.
Yep. And not being, even the littlest
bit. Not even a little bit. And being the honest kid that he is, he says, you know, I can't promise you that.
Yeah.
Thank you for the opportunity, and loses his job.
Yep.
Because he can't not be drunk at work.
Goes to the bar.
Yep, goes to the bar.
Sits at the bar with one other very well-cast man who looks like he's been at a lot of bars.
Yeah. And talk about how young and free and...
How he saved Amy by letting her go.
Yep, because he lets her get on the bus without
him. You saved that girl.
Mm-hmm.
I did. You're the king of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I am the king of the world. Beers and shots. Let's drink them.
Yeah, and they drink together and celebrate youth and their manhood and triumph and saving this girl.
They're both young men.
Yeah.
One guy looks like he's 70 and the other
he's probably 40, but he looks 70 because he spent a lot of time in the Georgia bar.
Yeah.
And then he drives home and in a callback to the beginning of the movie, sticks his head out the window and he's yelling about how much he loves everybody.
Yeah.
Crashes into his own mailbox.
Yeah. His mom comes out.
And she's mad at him.
Yeah.
And then he goes into the house.
And she said, I'm going to let you go see your father. And he said, too late, I already did. You were right.
Mm-hmm.
And then she says, you're nothing like him. Nobody has a bigger heart than you do. Nobody loves people the way you do. And he says, but nobody loves me.
Yeah. So he breaks down in the kitchen and says, nobody loves me.
He goes down, deletes his I hate my ex-girlfriend college entrance essay, and he writes another one based on challenges,
hardships,
and the future. Those are the three kind of prompt words in the essay.
College essay. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so he talks about, so here we are, we're at the liminal space again.
Yes.
What was, you know, the challenges, the was, what is the hardship you're facing, the is, and what is the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he writes, go ahead, Jezebel.
And so he says, basically, for as long as I can remember, I've been afraid. And he's basically just been afraid of failing and of letting people down. And so he did all of these things to get rid of that fear and to get rid of that pain. So all of his behavior is his living in the now. I don't think he said that in the essay, his drinking.
Yeah.
That's all to numb the pain, to keep away the pain so that he didn't have to feel those things.
Correct.
And then he basically says, it's always come down to me. It's been about me, not the other people in his life. It's his fear and his numbing of himself. And he's like, basically, now I'm going to do something different.
Yep. So then he gets in his car, drives, shows up at her college,
mm-hmm.
carrying her jacket, which is really a nice touch from the movie makers. It is a callback
to when he offered to carry her jacket. Yep. I mean, it's a really well-done movie.
Really tight. Yeah. Tightly done.
Yeah.
And so he shows up, and he walks up the stairs, and she comes out. She looks great.
Like, she does.
She looks much older, much more mature,
mm-hmm.
you know. And she walks out with her books, and she sees him coming up the steps. And you just see her looking at him, and it ends. So she doesn't, there's no like hint of a smile from her.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching really carefully the second time to see if she like kind of smiles a little bit to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
She's just looking.
Nope, she just tucks her hair behind her ear.
Tucks her hair behind her ear.
Yep. Just looks at him.
Looks at him.
And he's looking up at her.
Yes.
With this kind of, you know, hope, you know, face full of hope.
Yes.
Yes. And then that's the end.
That's the end. The spectacular now, you know, so for me, I'm going to just try to put it all together in one big bundle here at the end.
Let's do it, yeah.
You know, he goes and sees his father. He realizes he is his father. You know, then he acts like his father when he kicks her out of the car. And then as he goes through the rest of it, everybody asks him, can you do this? No, I'm going to live in the moment. He's again his father.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has his moment of crisis where he's like, oh, and his mom says, you're lovable. And he's like, I am lovable. I'm going to go back and be with her. And he shows up. And it's the end of the modern day, the days of wine and roses, Jack Lemmon, and I can't remember the woman where he makes her a lush, because his ex-girlfriend even says, did you make her a lush yet?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, ugh, and he buys her a flask for prom,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And so, she doesn't drink until she meets him, and then she just starts drinking all the time, because he drinks all the time, and she does what other people do.
She does what other people mm-hmm. do. So, and so again, so we layer in with the lower class, and they're coming from the South somewhere, and it's economically depressed where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the spectacular now, I think it's a sarcastic look. I think the title is sarcastic.
Mm-hmm.
The spectacular now is not spectacular.
It is, no.
MAGA is not MAGA. This is what it looks like. It looks like my dad died of opioid addiction, and I've started drinking because there's no hope for us, and to have a dream is smirked at by the upper classes,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then he shows up at the college and she's like, oh my God, there's my station in life that has come to greet me as I'm trying to get out. And she's confronted by it and you don't know what's going to happen. And so for me as a viewer, I say, absolutely, she's going back with him. And it's just going to be, she's going to become her mother. He's going to become his father.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be good.
It's a really sad movie.
It is a super sad movie.
Yeah, because the other thing is that, you know, there is kind of that way that that movies usually go. And, you know, a movie especially like this, you know, the two people meet, they kind of fall in love. Everything's mismatched, good.
Their friends don't want them together.
Yes. And then against all odds, they're together. They love each other. And then things come to break them apart. And then you are waiting for that moment for them to get back together.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, for his personal journey, because it's a movie about him, his personal journey is, oh, I can do all of these things and it's fine. I can live in the moment. And then he has this, like, barrage of scenes with people basically showing him how what he's going to lose if he continues to behave that way. And he has this moment of, like, I'm going to change my life. But then we don't see him making those changes. We have no evidence that he is going to be different. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're like that as a teenager, mm-hmm. who's now not graduated from high school, doesn't have a job, needs to kick the habit of drinking all of the time, you know, we have no evidence that he is going to be different. You know, it's almost, I don't know if you're supposed to read it as a triumphant moment that he's like, I'm going to change, and then goes to go find her. But we don't have any evidence of actions that he's taken besides writing an essay to the college, mm-hmm. that he has changed. And so you don't want them to be back together because you don't see any evidence that they are going to be different from their parents yet. They've come to that realization moment without making the changes after that.
Yeah. You actually have hope for her.
You do have hope for her. But until he shows up again.
If she can separate from him, which brings us... The star by far.
Star by far. You have a star by far?
My star by far is her friend Crystal.
Oh, Crystal. Crystal, who is no nonsense. Crystal is not no about nonsense. She's not about his, she is not swayed by his charm.
His charisma does not work.
He tries to.
Crystal, so great to meet you. no, I know who you are. Doesn't she shake his hand.
Does not like
and
him.
And one of my favorite tropes that I hope they do keep. We got to get the French club. Everybody belongs to French
Everybody's
club.
Everybody's in French club. Crystal's in French club.
And I was
club.
Trying to think last night if I know anybody that's actually ever been in French club.
I don't think that I was in French club. I don't know anybody who was in
As
French club.
As a French major?
Yeah, I wasn't in, there wasn't a French, I mean, I guess I was in the life French club now of, you know, being a French major and
but you didn't
living in France.
Have but to leave lunch early to go to French
I
club?
I did not have to leave early to go to French club.
Because Sam.
Yes.
Sam and Cindy.
Are they in French club?
They're in French club.
Oh. So I love the trope of French club. It's a great one.
I love the trope as well. So Crystal comes and gets her to take her to French club to keep him away. And then when he ghosts her, Crystal shows up and says, you need to leave her alone. You can't do this to her. Mm-hmm. And so Crystal is my star by far. Crystal can see all the things that are happening. Mm-hmm. And she's like, if we're going to make it out, this we got to be focused. Mm-hmm. So if this is truly the focused girl of our byline, she needs to focus. And Crystal is there to help her.
Yes.
Yep.
She is. Crystal.
Star by far.
She's, yes. And, you know, sometimes I also do want to give an honorable mention because I do think that Cassidy is the secret star of this movie as well. Yep. No wonder that Brie Larson is a future Academy Award winner at this point.
Yeah.
Because she is great. And she also has a really compelling story about personal growth and choice. And, she's a great character in this movie too. We have a new future sponsor.
Speaking of drinking.
Not an official, yes. Speaking of drinking, but not drinking alcohol. speaking of another drug of choice, caffeine.
Yeah, we love our amines. Human beings, we love them.
Yes, love them, love them. So a new future sponsor of our show is Steam Coffee House.
Steam Coffee House?
Yes, located in the South Pearl Street district of Denver.
Must be lovely.
It is. They make some great coffee. The baristas are awesome.
We should do a live podcast.
I am recording this episode propelled by the caffeine from Steam that I got this morning. The patrons are great. The people are great.
So, future sponsor.
Future sponsor, Steam Coffee. Stop by and grab yourself a coffee.
Thank you, Steam, for being a future sponsor.
And speaking of French Club, they have French pastries there.
Oh.
Provided by Denver's finest French bakery.
You know what Amber would say.
Quoi?
Amber says quoi?
So thank you, Steve, for being a future sponsor of our show, and hopefully
and a shout out to Amber Ruffin.
And we love you, Amber. We are your biggest fans.
We do love
We're
you,
We're ruffians.
Amber. We are ruffians.
our new name we just invented right now for fans of Amber Ruffin. So thank
Border
you.
Border ruffians.
Yes, and thank you, Steam. Hopefully it's also a site of a future maybe live show.
I think it will be.
Reach out to us, Steam. All right, should we rate the movie?
Let's rate it. I went first last time, I believe. Didn't I?
No, I went first last
time. Well, that doesn't count.
Because I gave the kissing booth one kissing booth, one
right.
KB.
Okay.
So it is your turn.
All right. So Debbie, number one, who's out there maybe listening, I'm going in, and this was very, extremely well done.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard movie to watch. But we're not about people going into the liminal space and having a rosy, cozy time. And so this was about somebody going towards the liminal space but refusing to go in. Which is a fantastic thing because not everybody can make it into the liminal space and out again. And so it was just fantastic. And so I think I'm going to give it, you know, because I was off on my, I should have given Dude 60,000,
mm-hmm.
which would have been, you know, a 4.8 stars.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to adjust my scale back again. So
okay.
I'm going to give The Spectacular Now 72,184 KBs.
Okay.
It was
our,
very well
our
done.
Our mathy listeners out there can translate that into stars.
Yeah.
I agree with you. We're going to have to find some movies that we fundamentally disagree on too.
Yeah.
So we get some more, you know, lively debate in here as well. Because I think we tend to
Yeah, but I think you came around and set it up. Because initially.
I did. Because I was
Yeah, because you had come out
Well, because I watched the kissing
KB,
booth.
KB.
I watched KB, and then I watched Set It Up. So Set It
and
Up seems like a seemed like a fantastic.
And watched Set It Up, yes. And I was like, whew.
Yeah. So, but
then
but
we came together later, but we were
yes,
just
disparate. We were. And so, I will say with The Spectacular Now, I agree with you on it. I think it's, you know, comparing it to what I rated, say, Dude, which I also, I really liked Dude. It was enjoyable. There were challenging things in it too. But so The Spectacular Now, it's such a well-made film. Mm-hmm. The performances are great. I love everybody who's in it. There's a lot that I liked about it, but I did not enjoy the experience of watching that movie because it is a tough movie and it's a really sad movie. Mm-hmm. And so I think I'm going to give it, you know, I gave Dude, I think 31,
you gave,
I think it 25, I think initially.
Yeah. And it should have been 30.
So I think I will give it, I'm going to give The Spectacular Now 56,463
KBs. Very, very nice.
So, yes. I would actually tell other people to watch this movie, but I don't want them to think maybe that it is a movie that it's not.
Yeah.
It's not a Dude.
No, this was...
It's not a Set It Up.
You know, when we were trying to figure out where they were living, I was like, there's a good chance they're living in Ebbings, Missouri.
Yes, I was thinking about that parallel as well.
Yes. So if
movies
you're listening
that
and
are
you're
challenging,
wondering,
but were, like, interesting.
Yes, if mm-hmm. you're wondering what this movie is...
They could be in Missouri, that's
they
true.
They could be living in Ebbing, Missouri,
they
because
be.
It's that rough.
Yeah.
But that good. Okay.
All right.
What are we watching next episode?
I think that's what we have coming up.
Well, we're going to give a shout out to Kevin MacLeod for the music.
Yes. So thank you to Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.
Yeah.
Incompetech.com. All of our music is provided by Kevin MacLeod. He is doing the Lord's work out there, producing so much music.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to find on there, you can find it.
You can find it.
It is great. We appreciate Kevin MacLeod and the hard work that he does producing.
Call
some
him. You have
great
to have with Joel Courtney sometime.
Yes. Call us, Joel Courtney. And in 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
So subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. You can find if you search American Jezebel, Greasy Rapidian, Talking Nonsense. We come up on iTunes now, so like, subscribe, listen to this, our new episode's coming out.
Yeah.
And in 2 weeks, we're going to have a new episode out. And in 2 weeks, between now and then, sit down and watch another studio movie. This one is not on Netflix Instant Watch either.
No.
You have to go out and find a copy of this. Widely available, though. We will be watching The Edge of 17.
The Edge of 17.
I think it's about the same time period.
I think it's
a little bit more. It's a pretty recent movie.
Yep.
And
then we'll get together and talk some nonsense.
Thanks for talking nonsense.
Talking nonsense. 2 weeks.